For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
And, of course, there's also the fact that for a long time, people questioned whether or not Jerry Seinfeld was straight, which I find hilarious as an actual gay person, because I'm just like, no.
That's funny.
Oh, people at home!
What's up with that?
You ready? Welcome to the Uso Penitentiary.
Let's get it out.
Move to the music, play like music. Move it to the music.
Welcome to Monday Night Rollins.
Woo!
Yo ho ho and a bottle of Dom.
Bro.
The new day. Let me talk to you.
If I can be serious for a minute.
For the love of God, stay away from the dipper dogs.
Move to the music, play like music. Move it to the music, yeah.
Acknowledge me.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the DWI podcast. My name is PC Tunney. I am your podcast Jedi and the artist formerly known as Pizza Funny. Yes, that's what that means on Twitter. It's not that awesome, but I feel like it. Anyway, joining me as always is the other half of the world's greatest tag team never, the man, the myth, the legend, one half of, he just threw me off. No, we're all right, fuck it.
We're now a cooking show and a pet show.
There we go. And pets. Okay, go ahead. Kyle Moore, the Dr. S'mores himself, Kyle Moore is on the show. Let's get it going there from Outsider's Edge. One of my favorite people to talk wrestling with. How the hell have you been? And tell us about your beautiful companion next to you, because apparently all of our pets, even mine here, and I didn't know it, has just invaded our entire show. But that's fine. They're all cute. So you can tell everybody where they can follow you and see your beautiful dog.
All right. So first of all, you can follow me on Twitter at Dr. S'mores. I am here with my beautiful little pit bull, Xena. She is a big ball of love. I'm doing great because as an AEW truther from day one, I'm here for all of the things that keep coming out about how they're just like every other wrestling company. Love it.
Yeah, here we go.
Finally, we found someone to praise.
Here we go.
Up AEW.
I'm a truther. I'm not here to boost nothing. I love all of this bullshit that keeps coming out about how they're just as fucked up as everybody else is.
All right. I can't wait to get into that. We'll definitely get into that. DP, I got the Hawkster here. What do you got? That's Coleco, who likes to just, she wants the, or the door is open back there, by the way.
It is not open. She would like it to be open, but it will not be open until she starts whining. That's where she wants
She's
to
like,
go right
let
now.
Let me out. I want to go kill the birds.
Yeah, that
she
is
wants
a thing,
in the back. She wants in this back like storage area of my basement for some reason, and there's nothing back there, but the door's closed. So
has your
the
dog
door needs to be open.
Has either of your dogs brought you a present, i.e., a dead bird, yet or no?
Oh, my dogs are way too clumsy to actually kill anything.
That's funny. Oh, we had a dog when I was growing up that liked to bring you presents. AKA whatever it could kill, and it would just bring it back to you. Oh, hey, look what I got you. Oh. Okay, thanks. Yeah.
All right. Just want you to know they love you.
Movie. Right. Something like that, I guess. Are you going out tonight? You going to have some drinks tonight there, Dr. S'mores, you think? You might partake in some of the... responsibly, I mean.
No, I think most of my drinking will be reserved for tomorrow because I am a season ticket holder to the terrible South Carolina Gamecocks, and I will be tailgating real hard to watch them play the equally terrible Charlotte 49ers.
All right.
Sweet.
Well, good. Well, put some picks out so we can see what's going on, the view from the game. Hopefully, yeah, you guys got smoked last week. That was by, who'd you play
last
week?
Yeah, but we played Georgia. So, like, that's right. You know, it's fine. It'll be okay. It's SEC football. It's nighttime football. I'll get to watch our cool LED stadium. And, yeah, it'll be fun.
All right. Well, we'll be looking for you. The game's probably on ESPN or something. You guys are in the SEC, right?
Oh, yeah. All of our games are on something.
I'll
let you know where to find me.
Sounds like a plan. All right, gentlemen. Let's take a quick commercial break, and then we're going to figure out what's going on. The show today, we got some current-day wrestling talk. We're going to get into the 80s of the top 100 here, and maybe a little Seinfeld as well. With our good friend and guest host, Kyle Moore, is here today from the Outsiders Edge. Don't forget, Chair Shot Radio Network, Outsiders Edge, every Friday afternoon. We'll be right back.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Hey folks, PC Tony here. Thanks to our new partnership with Angry Lemonade, you can save 10% on physical products and digital commissions using the promo code CHAIRSHOT. Head to angrylemonade.net to check out their amazing catalog of products and services. Use the promo code CHAIRSHOT to save 10%. That's angrylemonade.net.
TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
Oh, yes, I'd be remiss if I didn't remind all of you that Christopher Platt is on vacation this week. He's in the Hamptons. He's watering George's horses, Prickly Pete, and what's the other motherfucker's name? I forget.
Man has a kid and decides he doesn't have to go to work anymore. Must be nice.
Zena
agrees.
That's right.
Zena knows all about it. I don't know how when you start to have kids, all of a sudden you start doing travel and, like, you have more money. I don't understand how that works.
Well, that's fucking hilarious. No, Platt's actually having his sense of humor replaced because we all need to know that that needs... Anyway, no, I'm kidding. He's not going to like that one.
Oh, wait.
DP!
Wait, I got something for him.
Let's stop making... Uh-oh.
Wait, where'd it go? Oh, God. Oh, God.
Great radio.
These pretzels are making me thirsty.
Oh yeah, you cut that. Okay, that was from the Hennigan's episode. Yeah, that was Chris's
right.
Take on Woody Allen's line. One more time, can we get Chris Platt, how are those pretzels making you feel?
These pretzels are making me thirsty.
I think after you hear that, you understand my text to you guys afterwards. That all I hear is Bill Cosby coming out of that sound right there.
With the button pops and the old
got it to the button pop there. There we go. I love it. All right. Let's let everybody know what's happening this week on the 342nd edition of the DWI podcast.
Well, we're waiting.
Well, it's the big show.
Changed it up that time. I said big shoe.
I got big shoe sheet. All right, we're going to get into the fact that Logan Paul has found himself in a main event for the undisputed Universal WWE Championship. Paige, or Saraya, whatever you'd like to call her, I'm saddened that she's not in WWE, but she's back. She's back on AEW. Will she wrestle? That's the question. We're going to get into the 80s, 81 to 90 on the Chairshot Top 100. And time permitting, there may be some candy readily available, i.e. a Pez dispenser. So, DPP, why don't you go ahead and ring the bell? Man, I haven't called for the bell in a long time.
Oh, you kind of pushed on that one.
Yeah, and AJ, wherever you are, AJ, we're wondering where you are. Just text me, motherfucker. Sorry, I had to do that.
Well, where are you?
Kyle.
Yes.
What are your thoughts initially when you heard that Logan Paul was going to be in the main event at Crown Jewel taking on Roman Reigns? I think as knowledgeable wrestling fans, we all know that it's going to put eyeballs and it's going to make money, but a lot of us have been watching this for a while. How did you actually feel about him getting a title shot in this historic reign, right? There's those two things.
Well, so, I mean, my immediate reaction was, damn, like hasn't he only had like two matches? Like, shit, was my immediate reaction. But then I started to think about it, and I was like, well, I mean, this is pro wrestling, and like, pretty sure Kane won the WWF title for 24 hours within like a month of debuting, and lost, yeah, in that first blood match with Austin, and then just lost it promptly the next day. So like, anything can happen in wrestling, especially WWE's version of the sport. And Logan Paul has, you know, shown himself to be okay in his first two matches. I don't think this really runs the risk of hurting him per se, because he's really just a Hollywood draw, and he's still going to be a, you know, influencer draw regardless of how this match goes. And I feel like, I don't know, I just feel like there's nothing but upside, but it still will not get me to watch Blood Money, whatever number we're on.
Seven.
Excellent. So now I'm glad you brought that up. I'm glad we didn't forget to mention this. So everyone's well aware of Christopher Platt and his Jam in the Sand collection of naming these pay-per-views in Saudi. Well, our good friend, the doctor himself, also has his list of, do you want to lay some of these beautiful names you've cloaked upon this glorious Crown Jewel event?
Well, so I go with Blood Money is our theme, and so you know, there, I thought we were on Blood Money 8, and I was gonna call it Blood Money 8 Sandcastle Showdown, but it's come to my attention that it's only number 7, so we'll just go with a good Blood Money 7 Sand and Blood. There was Blood Money 5, a little less blood, a lot more money. There was Blood Money 2. There was like Blood Money 2, Electric Boogaloo, of course, because obviously
yeah,
it's a classic.
You guys both had that.
Yeah. So, you know, we're just here for the blood money, and like, that's all WWE's in it for, and I respect that, but I ain't gonna watch it.
Well, I mean, for me, it's on in the afternoon, so that's fucking awesome. So I'm going to watch it and get drunk and watch it in the afternoon.
Fair.
But, you know, here's the only thing is, yeah, great. This is the what they're sending. But it's just a hollow title defense. Would you agree, DP? Whereas, you know, he's not going to lose the title here.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think at this point they needed, you know, for these shows, you need that draw. You need that big, I guess, match. Like, you know, they always had Goldberg come back for these things or whatever, you know. Yeah, you clearly know he's not losing this one. I think they're, you know, maybe with the issues with not having Randy Orton around, because, you know, he was supposed to be kind of in the mix as well to have a title match, that they're trying to fill in certain things. And I had the same reaction Kyle had, like, what the fuck? You know, why is Logan Paul in this match? It's stupid. But yeah, after thinking about it a little bit, it's like, yeah, okay, it makes sense, right? You know, it's more of a money draw. It's going to get eyes on the product. Fine. He's looked great in his first couple matches, and he obviously is taking this seriously, it seems, but it does seem like an odd position to put him in. Obviously, there's going to be, I would assume, there's going to be all sorts of shenanigans with the whole bloodline and everything else that's going on in the storylines, too. So I think they can make it work, and I think it'll be fine. And at this point don't necessarily have a problem with it, but I think we all can be
ready with the fact that
he's not going to lose the title. Go ahead, Kyle.
We do know one thing. Blood Money coming up means they're going to kick Sammy out of the bloodline within the next month because he's not allowed in Saudi Arabia. So,
But can it just have an excuse for why he's not there? I mean, like,
yeah, they could, sure, they could.
You can't come.
I tell stories now.
But here's the thing is, like, this is the best thing in wrestling storylines right now. The most entertaining person in entire fucking professional wrestling is Sami Zayn. If you can't sit back and watch Sami Zayn interact with the Usos and watch him weekly, like, I honestly think Jimmy was originally supposed to be mad at him all the time, too, but he could never keep a straight face. So, like, well, you guys just be buddies then. And no, I was, that's a joke, but it's kind of almost the truth. Jay's having a hard time keeping that straight face. You can fucking see it. He almost popped Roman the week the Usos weren't there in the backstage too, right? So, I mean, Paul, here is my favorite thing, and I'll shut up, and you guys talk about what you think's moving forward for the bloodline. Give your Sami Zayn comments. But when Sammy comes into the ring this past week, and Paul Heyman's trying to handle it, and Sammy is like, maybe I should handle this one, and Paul just looks at him and goes, throws the microphone and walks out of the ring. Handle it. Pop big time for that shit. So I can't imagine them breaking this up anytime soon. But Kyle, we've been speculating on all this for a long time. Is that what you actually see happening? And where do you see Roman at the Rumble? And who do you see him losing it to? Is it Mania? Who's at Mania? What's your arc into Mania right now for Roman Reigns?
I don't know when he's going to lose the title, but I mean, we all know that Roman's on a collision course with Dwayne at Mania. Like, that's going to be a thing. Unless whatever movie Dwayne is in will not allow him to perform, that is going to be a thing. It's a license to print money in Los Angeles.
From your lips to God's ears, because I predicted that 2.5 years ago. So if it happens, great. That's why I'm saying they've had plenty of time to plan this out. But what's in the meantime then? How do you get to Royal Rumble here? Because Logan Paul is probably, that's just a crown jewel thing. It doesn't look like Extreme Rules is going to be anything major there. The War Games at Survivor Series, is that something? Who's that with, you know? And then Bray Wyatt coming back, is he the White Rabbit? Or is it?
Oh, he's definitely the White Rabbit. No, Bray Wyatt's definitely the White Rabbit. I have I have zero doubts in my mind on that. I definitely think it is Bray Wyatt. Now, do I think he'll be the one to take the belt off The Fiend? Off of Roman? Maybe, but not if they're smart, because if we know anything about Bray Wyatt, it's that Bray Wyatt, much like Hangman Adam Page, great at chasing a title, great at going after a title, gives him purpose to want a title. Not nearly as good once he's got one. I think that Karrion Kross is on a collision course with Drew McIntyre. I think they'll probably throw Lashley at Reigns again around December. I think Austin Theory is the wild card in all of this. You know, I think he's going to fail to cash in, but I think he's going to cash it in.
Yeah, he's going to lose it or fail. I don't think he's going to. It's just, first of all, Lashley and Rollins had an excellent match this past Monday night on Raw. That was excellent. But I said this on Twitter. I was like, Austin Theory, he's up here Billy Gunn in this Money in the Bank right here. I mean, it's just not going well for
me. Oh, no, I've got an even worse one. Austin Theory is giving me Damian Sandow vibes.
Oh, God. At least he's not outside the ring doing someone else's moves while they're inside the ring.
That's true. But just like the way that this like briefcase run has gone, I'm like, this is some Damian Sandow shit. This isn't even Baron Corbin got to lose the cash in so that somebody can lose the cash in finally. Like, this is some, like, Sandow stuff.
Yeah, I'm not loving that.
No, so I think they're probably... you mentioned Rollins. You know, it's really a shame that they can't turn Seth Rollins' face because he just can't do it. Because that would be an obvious filler arc to get you through the Royal Rumble.
He could.
And yeah. Raw desperately needs a world champion, because I think really what this is going to come down to is
all right,
USA is going to tell Raw, or is going to tell WWE that they got to have a title.
Do they? Are they? Is that in the contract? I don't think that is.
I don't think it's in the contract, but I think they're going to be like, yo, you want more money in your next TV deal? I want a world champion on my show.
telling you, you got to make the IC title one brand's champion, the US title the other brand's champion, treat them like world titles, and then that floating title is for ratings and prestige.
You're going to have to burn the United States Championship to make that a thing, because they spent the better part of two decades destroying the credibility that that belt has, and one or two good champions can't bring it back.
John well, we Cena just started over with a great match on Monday between Lashley and Rollins. So the belt looks good. I like the look of the belt.
It's all right.
No,
it's not.
They're like, I got up to go get a beer expecting someone to comment on the belt, and I heard nothing. So
I think Kyle's likes the old school belts like I do, it sounds like.
I mean, I honestly didn't hate the one that they had forever and a day that looked like a baseball diamond with the flag. It was simple.
Yeah.
It was simple, but it worked. I'm fine with simple.
I think
I miss the old white IC title.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I think a lot of people do.
I don't know if you can see my camera, but you mean this one?
Yes, that is the exact one that I mean.
Yeah. That was the first belt I bought, because that's a damn good looking belt, I'll tell you that.
That's a basement brag.
I mean, you know, Triple H is in charge again. He could bring out his two favorite things, his shovel and the big gold belt.
I feel like.
What about everybody's brought back? Who's the favorite person you've liked that he's brought back so far? I mean, Strowman's back, Gargano's back, Cross is back. Who have you been like, yes, I'm glad that person's back, and oh no, that we didn't need that.
At first, I was really excited that they brought Hit Row back, but they're not. It's not the same without Swerve. And I don't know that Swerve himself is the reason it's not the same, but just like. Ooh, yeah, without like a person to push at the front of this, it feels very not as big.
If you were top dollar, would you have let Ridge Holland give you an Alabama slam on TV? Because I'd be like, no, I'm a fucking big guy. I don't think you should be able to do that to me. And
If I were anybody on the roster, I wouldn't let Ridge Holland do any move that involved my head.
No, but do you know what I'm saying? I get that's funny and morbid, and hopefully Big E's back soon.
But, hey, Big E looks great right now, and we love that he posted a video the other day of him like nodding his head without the neck brace. So I'm just like, yes.
I've only been able to watch videos of Sasha and Naomi for some reason that they just keep popping up on my screen. So that's
how about that.
Interesting.
Yeah, I don't know. It's weird. I'm not complaining, but whatever. Anyway. I'm just giving you a reason why I haven't seen the Big E video. No. But I forgot where I was going. I'm thinking about Sasha.
Well, you were asking us about favorite people they brought back and didn't bring back. And yes, the only other thing I'll say Rich before Allen I give it back to you, I see why Braun Strowman appeals to some people. I get it. I understand. I could have done without ever seeing him again.
Omos is back with MVP too.
Who? I know who MVP is, but yeah, who's the
you.
Other one?
I got you. No, my question was to be go back and seriously say, if you were AJ, if you were Top Dollar, would you let anybody right now that was this that size of Rich Holland Alabama slam you when you come in and you're supposed to be a fucking big guy? Like
not
I thought that
means
just
something.
Was not good for his character.
Not unless it's going to mean
yeah,
something.
Yeah. Well, that's part of what I'm saying with, like, when they first brought them back, it was like, yes, of course, bring this group back. Like, why did you get rid of them in the first place? Like, they were over, like, Rover. It just made so much sense. But, like, they brought back the three that they brought because Swerve is with AEW. And if Vince were still in charge, I think that that might have been okay. But see, when Hunter originally got this whole thing going, he wanted Swerve to be the singles guy, and Top Dollar and Ashanti were just a tag team. And now they've been brought back, and I'm feeling this is a tag team with a woman who they're never going to let wrestle because she is not ready.
Well, hopefully they can, you know, over time with running the tag team, that she can continue to train and see where they go from there while they build the character. I don't know. What do you think, DP? Any thoughts on Kyle's comments or any other bring backs from Triple H, the new Triple H era?
Yeah, I think if you drop another person into that group, you know, as like the leader or something, you might be able to make that work. I mean, I'm always a big fan of factions and stuff like that. So, yeah, him not being there, you know, Swerve not being there, kind of, it doesn't feel like it's not the same group, you know. So, like, but if you can make it work, you bring in somebody else and have that happen. I'm not necessarily a fan of, like, specific people that they brought back. You know, I'm a fan of Braun. I think more for Braun Strowman's favorites that we made up in that game, you know. He's entertaining, though, and he's a good gimmick and a good, like, you know, he's one of those, like, what do you call that?
He's an attraction.
Our friend Rob in our group chat calls him Big Shouty. And I think that is the most perfect encapsulation of what Braun Strowman is. Big Shouty. He's big.
Do you know what Braun Strowman's favorites is? Have you ever heard of that?
I've not heard of that, but I'm going to assume it has to be something along the lines of Roman, I'm not finished with you.
Let's play it.
You want to play it?
Yeah, here we go.
All right, hang on a
second. Yeah, go ahead.
All right, we'll play the music. Yeah. All right.
Here we go. Strowman's favorites with our first contestant this year, because we haven't done this in a while. Dr. Storm. Alright, I do my best Christopher Platt. Welcome back to the sensation that's sweeping the nation. It's Strowman's favorite. Alright, this week our contestant from the Outsider's Edge. Self, it's Dr. S'mores, Mr. Kyle Morris. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks for having me. Big time fan, you know.
Alright, so.
First time caller, long time listener.
I'm going to ask you a question, and yep. Love the show. Great topic on the show. I'm going to ask you a question, and it's going to be a one-word fill in the blank, but you have to answer it like Braun Strowman would.
Okay.
So, if you are out and about, like Braun Strowman has been it so many times, and he drives home, but he can't quite find the driveway. Sometimes he parks on the
lawn!
And that's been another edition of Braun Strowman's favorite.
Okay. you know, we talked about what's next for Roman. I mean, Braun is a readily made filler arc because, like, his whole spiel is, Roman, I'm not finished with you. So, like, I came back because I'm still not finished with you, bitch.
Well, and you think of all they had a feud there for quite a while. We got to see them wrestle each other one time at Fastlane here in Milwaukee. And
they had good chemistry.
It's perfect. It's a perfect chance for to run a month there of a pay-per-view with that feud to get them to WrestleMania, right, for sure.
It's like when Big Show actually wanted to have a match and sell for somebody in the right way, he could have a good match with somebody that could give good matches. And Strowman will do the same for Roman, who Roman has good matches, right? He knows how to work the crowd. He knows when to get into it, when to slow it down, when to mix it up a little bit. I don't know. I think
if they'd have gave him the belt that first time, like they should have when he faced Brock the first time, then we wouldn't have to worry about Roman needing to hold the belt for 800 days because they'd have readily made a star. He had so much momentum and was so popular. And he's not as good, but it doesn't matter because WWE has proven you just got to be that good the first time.
And that's not what the title's about, right? I mean, for a lot of those, it's just like you got that momentum. You're riding that wave of the popularity is there right now. You give him that title at that point, and that's just it's perfect sailing.
And then he is forever. And then he is forever a threat because he's former world champion. You can't count him out.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we'll see what happens moving forward here. It's all going to be very interesting. I don't think we're going to get the full Triple H effect until we start getting past WrestleMania. Right? There's so many things that were happening, and you don't want to just totally depart from every avenue you were going down and leading into it, because there's a lot of good stuff going on. But Dan, you look like you got, I'll give you guys each one last thing on WWE and then we'll move on to some AEW talk.
Yeah. I think it's just a kind of slow continuation into the Triple H era. You're seeing a little bit more and more, you know, he's bringing in those guys back, the guys back that he wants and things like that. And then, you know, we haven't heard anything about a draft yet, So I'm excited to hope that continues to not hear a thing. And at some point we get away from the draft. And it sounds like Survivor Series isn't necessarily about Raw versus SmackDown. And somebody here called War Games. So I was very excited to see War Games coming. And it could be like the Bloodline.
It's not going to feel the same without William Regal saying it. They call Tony just and work out something just long enough to get like Regal on loop saying War Games.
Right.
Did AJ or Chris call it? Who called War Games at Survivor Series?
That would be this guy right here, baby.
Oh, you did. Okay.
I called War Games, but I called it Raw versus SmackDown. Oh, he's fucking with me, you little bitch.
My last thing is just going to be, you know what Triple H wasted no fucking time doing? Going back to black and gold for NXT.
Yeah.
Oh, hilarious.
I bet every time he looked at that logo, it just made him feel sick in his stomach.
I really hope, I said last week that what they need to do is have Bron Breakker come out and have the NXT, this whole confetti logo and him tear it down. I said light it on fire so that it goes all black charred in the middle with the fire around it so it looks black and gold to give the last, F you to Vince. Like, this was my show, damn it. Let's get back to the black and gold.
No, we said he could borrow the flamethrower from The Rock that he used and just light that thing up like they did at WrestleMania.
There you go.
All right, let's take a quick commercial break. We're going to come back, and we're going to get into a couple AEW notes. DWI Podcast 342 with none other than the Dr. S'mores, Mr. Kyle Moores. We'll be right back.
This is your boy Kenny Killer telling you to make sure you check out thechairshot.com, bringing you breaking news, interviews, podcasts galore, everything pro wrestling. Make sure you check it out, thechairshot.com.
Thechairshot.com. Always use your head.
Kyle, since you love AEW so much and appreciate everything that they have done accomplished, I want to go ahead and give you a few minutes to just go ahead and speak your piece about whatever's on your mind, and then we'll wrap it up by us three having a brief conversation about Paige. Is there anything, what do you got on your mind right now? Come on.
I will use this opportunity, as I do anytime I have an opportunity to talk about them, to say, Tony, baby, you got all that cocaine money. Like, hire you a team. Get you some people to make some choices. Come on. This is amateur shit. No wonder your sports teams are all bad.
I couldn't pass up the opportunity to hear something like that. That was excellent. That was excellent. Now, let's get real here. Paige is back. And I'll tell you what, I like shed a little tear inside when I heard that she was with AEW, because I heard there was talks of she's been cleared for a while and that she might be trying to be bringing her back at WWE. Kyle, what's your initial reaction there? I mean, I think we're glad for her, but like, oh, why not WWE?
My initial reaction is like, I mean, if that's what you want to
deal.
No, my initial reaction is, I mean, if that's what you want to do, baby, like, I ain't ever going to tell somebody not to do what makes them happy, but, like, your back is shaped like a noodle, last I heard, and, like, I really don't know that that is the correct choice, but if, like, you're a grown-ass woman, so if that's what you want to do and it's what's going to bring you joy, then, like, far be it from me to stand in your way. And then to circle back to your other question, PC, no, if you're a woman's wrestler and you want to be treated like a big fucking deal and go somewhere where you're going to be creatively fulfilled, then you want to go to Impact.
I just felt like she could have been, I mean, this is all, we don't even know if she's going to wrestle yet, right? We have no idea. Just because DB and Christian and Edge and all of them came back doesn't mean that she's going to be able to. But I just thought that if she was able to wrestle and Hunter wanted her back, she could have easily ended up at the main event of WrestleMania with Ronda Rousey.
Potentially, yeah. I mean, she is a big deal for AEW in the sense that she's a big name, but it's hard to get excited about a women signing in a company that continues to put the women in the death spot every week and continues to treat the women like an afterthought and only push Jade Cargill and her TBS championship on the TNT show. And then when you call the company out about the fact that they continue to not actually push the women and make the women a big deal, they want to give you that like 1990s man baby, nobody watches women's sports, look at the numbers bullshit. Well, why would they when for the entirety of your 3 years of existence as a company outside of that one match, that one time, you have treated the women like an afterthought? So it's really hard for me to be excited genuinely about a legendary women's wrestler signing with a company that is either going to only use her as a mouthpiece or is going to, within a month from now, turn her into a Rampage sideshow doing really dangerous spots with asshole Tay Conti and asshole Sammy Guevara. Like, nah, miss me with that shit.
Yeah, why'd you bring it up, Dan? What the fuck is wrong with you?
Well, you know, I like to cause controversy because that creates cash.
And not to mention, now we're all robbed of Paige here.
I just always think of the better production value, the better storyline. You know, when it's done right, it's done best in WWE. That's hard to argue. But I mean, yeah, your point of Impact would have been a better choice as far as wrestling goes, but. That leads me to think she's not going to wrestle, and she's just going to go grab the paycheck from them and whatever. So.
And good for her. One of our recurring things on the Outsider's Edge is take all of these shitty billionaires' money. Because nobody makes that amount of money by being a good person. So if they're willing to unload it, take all of these shitty billionaires' money.
Yeah. How much and give it to
Paul
me.
Newman? Paul Newman, he sells stuff for other people. He gives it all back, the salad dressings and everything.
I mean, nothing good comes from anyone with the name Newman. Duh.
Newman.
Good foreshadowing. All right, I think we've had enough current day wrestling. I think we need to go and, you know, hark back to when times were better, when we were younger, when it was so much bigger and bolder and superhero-ish as opposed to just kind of backstage horseshit. Right? That's a pretty good description of like a childhood wrestling fan, and now we're adults and we're like, God, these people are so fucked up in the head.
Sometimes you like it better when you didn't know shit.
Mm-hmm.
You just watch the show. Bliss. You know?
Yeah, right. I miss it.
Before we get into it here, Kyle, why don't you give us a little bit of your favorite wrestling growing up and when you became a fan and you know what you really love about wrestling that drives you to want to get on the radio every week and bitch about it just like us.
Well, so it's funny, my older sister got me into wrestling, and I think I probably started watching it at first just because she watched it and it was something that we could talk about together. But you know, I'm a 90s kid. I came of age in the late 90s and early 2000s. So like I was growing up during the Attitude Era. The Rock was obviously a thing that I really loved. I was really big fan of the New Age Outlaws. And then I'm from the Carolinas. So like, I feel sad talking about him now, but Jeff Hardy was like one of my favorite wrestlers for a really, really long time. And now I just get sad every time his name comes up because sure. I'm just like, oh, it's just tragic. But as I've grown older, you know, like I look back on it now and like I liked him as a kid, but probably one of my low-key favorite wrestlers from the Carolinas that I didn't fully appreciate until we got older is Shane Helms.
Yeah.
Like, Shane's just great.
I agree, 100%. What any problems coming up with 100? Any thoughts on any insight into how you made your list, or how, was it more difficult? Was it easier?
What was hard for me is because I was born in 90 and came of age in the late 90s, early 2000s. Like none of the 80s golden era shit hits for me the same way that it does for other people. I understand it's important. I recognize why it's important and I can enjoy watching it. But like I had messaged the group chat a while ago, like I will never understand what people see in the Ultimate Warrior because all the Ultimate Warrior has ever been for me is gross, homophobic asshole. And so like nothing about him ever made sense for me. So like my hard part with the top 100 is properly quantifying some of the people from the golden era who I know are important, but who I don't have a frame of reference to. I have never watched a Lex Luger match from start to finish.
And nor should you. There's only
there's no reason that anyone should watch the total package.
Unless he's wrestling Stan Hansen, it's probably not worth watching all the way through. But you know what? That's the great thing. There wasn't a gigantic age difference here, but there was a lot of different perspectives that came into making all these lists, and there were no rules except for it was your top 100 WrestleMania era. So basically, if you wanted to take the year leading up to Mania 1, fine, put it in there too. But it doesn't matter. You didn't have to have people from Japan. You didn't have to have Mexico. You didn't have to have 80s. You didn't have to have 90s. You didn't have to have today. You could do whatever you wanted, right?
Yeah. That's what I enjoyed about this list. And that's what I was going to say is like, that's the beauty of this list is it's what you grew up with. It's what who you think you enjoyed and things like that, where it's going to be a handful because we're, like you said, we're not necessarily all that far off in age where some of those guys are going to trickle to the top or whatever. And there's going to be a ton of crossover, but you can see the interests of the different people as to where they, flow their people, like their favorite guys. Like mine are probably 90% WWE and a handful of WCW, because that's what I watched. And I grew up in the, I was early 80s, late 80s, early 90s were my, favorite era.
Well, certain names we're all going to have, because like, how do you put a top 100 superstars of an era list together and not have like Austin on it or right. Rock or like Hogan? Like where you put them right. is debatable, but like obviously, those they're big money people, John Cena is going to be on everybody's list somewhere.
Right. But some people are going to have a little more Japan guys or may have other people a little bit higher because that's what they watched and they know them a little better than some of the other ones. So it's really cool to see where people put those guys.
Great transition there. Speaking of Japan, to kick us off here as we get into the 80s, first we have to get to number 90. And number 90 is none other than the head of Suzuki Gun out there in New Japan Pro Wrestling. It's Minoru Suzuki. Minoru, however you want to fucking pronounce it. I got most of the Japanese names down, but, there's sometimes they say it one way or the other. I am very intrigued by watching this guy and the back of his head try to gnaw in and eat his brain. It's just a beautiful thing to watch this back of his head. But literally, that's what it looks like. No, he is. I enjoy watching some of his matches. I enjoyed when he came and did a lot of things in America when they were going back and forth with Impact. So I'm a fan. I think he deserves to be in a top 100 list. Kyle, what about you? I think you had him in your top 100.
I did, yes. Oh, I had Suzuki a little bit higher in my list. But I love Suzuki. One of the things you'll see with some of the people that I rate high, I'm big on presentation. Like I'm big on the pomp and circumstance and presentation. And like Suzuki's entrance theme is legendary. The Kaze ni na re. Like that is all of that like excess is the kind of shit that I love. And then you get him in the ring and he's a very hard hitter, like physical style, but he does it in a way that is also like incredibly safe for such a hard hitting style. And it's just so, for me anyway, it's impossible not to respect Suzuki.
He's like, you don't need to be a Japanese wrestling fan, or you don't need to be Japanese, or you don't need to know. He's like universal in his translation of storytelling. Do you know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Like you can be an American that's never seen Japanese wrestling before and not know who this guy is. And you turn it on and you watch him wrestle and you're like, okay, this guy's probably a big deal. And if you've never seen him before, because he just emotes that.
Well, and like you don't have to be into, you're right, Japanese wrestling, but one thing that it shows you, like it shows you how big a deal he is, that when he left his old company to go back to New Japan, they just turned the entire storyline about how his faction was so violent and so awful in their old company that they got chased away, and the New Japan fans just instantly embraced that shit because they're like, we ain't gonna question this dude. Nope, this is a legend. We don't want no smoke.
He comes with an air of being super legit, right? Like a Brock Lesnar kind of. So, DP, anything to add here? I don't know if you've ever had a chance to watch him or know who he is necessarily. I don't mean that as an insult.
I mean, as soon as you know, they brought those over to America. You know, it started to get really popular. You know, I think the sales started to go higher than they got really close to Harley Davidson's. You know, their motorcycles were, oh, sorry, not that Suzuki.
Why are you trying to be funny?
Terrible.
Sorry.
Oh boy. Yeah, you're done.
Yeah.
You're done.
Cut me off.
You're done here. All right. Well, I think you'd be able to help us out with number 89. No, instead of punishing you, we're going to make you just stay here and talk about number 89. And it's none other than the man who beat Kyle's favorite, the Ultimate Warrior, at Royal Rumble.
Hey, he's an Iraqi sympathizer.
Former WWF champion. Yeah, stand up straight, maggots. DP, tell us a little bit about Sergeant Slaughter.
Man, you know, he was before, like, I guess his peak was before my era, right, when I really started watching it. But he had that resurgence, you know, in the early 90s, really early 90s, 93.
Well, yeah.
You know, with the whole Iraqi war, you know, with the war going on and things like that, it was, like, just this perfect opportunity to bring him back into the fold, you know. Come back. He was always this, you know, American, you know, all American guy. And then all of a sudden he just turns on America.
He was Mr. G.I. Joe. Like, he left.
He literally had a
character. He was making money with G.I. Joe, and they were going to start a wrestling thing. And he left. He told Vince no. He went from the AWA to do the G.I. Joe thing. And then, you know, that didn't work out like he wanted. And look at who's the first all American guy to turn heel. Sergeant fucking Slaughter, not Hulk Hogan.
Right.
I mean, my first memories of Sergeant Slaughter, being the younger one in the room, were Commissioner Slaughter versus DX. The first Sergeant Slaughter match that I ever saw was Sergeant Slaughter versus Triple H at In Your House. So, like, that was my memories of Sarge. And, like, whenever I think of Sarge, the first image that pops in my head is Sean with the face shield on and the little wipers.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, it's just the terrorizing that they did to him when he was commissioner was phenomenal. Like, him as a character was, like, just a great character. And, like, that's where I remember him from is the you know, early 90s when he was the bad guy, you know, hanging out with the Iron Sheik and General Adnan. And that was, yeah, your boy, the Ultimate Warrior, and Hogan were buddies. And the whole, like, the hatred that I had because he took the title from the Warrior when the Macho King smashed him with the scepter. And it was like, why the fuck is he? And that was the purple. They had the purple winged belt title for him. And it was like, man, this sucks. And finally Hogan takes the title after, like, Hogan was supposed to be done and they didn't have anything else to do. And that was just the whole timing thing of that war that just made him so popular at the time. And then, yeah, going into being a commissioner, like, he was just a phenomenal character, like, the entire time I watching him.
Yeah, he never was a great in-ring general, but if you wanted to see some of the better things he did, you'd have to go back into the early 80s and things of that nature. But quite the character, quite the guy who capitalized on his own name. I mean, one of the first to go outside of wrestling and be like, hey, I can go do this with somebody else who likes my character. So good on him. Let's keep it rolling. We're going to go back in time even more here to Bob Backlund. I don't know how
cross-faced chicken wing.
Did he make your list, guys? Did Bob Backlund make your list?
I had him at 65. Right. But I will admit, like, when we were talking about, you know, what weighed for you, anybody who won a world title and main evented either of a Starrcade or a WrestleMania, like, that mattered a lot to me. So it was hard for me to put people who can check those boxes very low on the list.
I didn't have him on my list mainly because his main run was prior to the WrestleMania era with his biggest popularity. So he didn't make my top 100 because of that. Basically.
You mean you didn't love Kevin Nash pinning him in 30 seconds?
No, actually I did love that. Cause it meant that reign was over.
Oh, here comes Kevin Nash. He can't wrestle. Oh, but he's wrestling Bob Backlund. He can. Oh, he can't wrestle anymore, though. Still like, wrestle. Oh, fuck.
Didn't he come back during the Attitude Era and do a program with Kurt Angle when Kurt was was looking for a submission before he settled on the ankle lock?
Yeah, and at the time they were portraying him as super. He is fucking crazy nutbag, but like they were. Oh,
that's part of the reason I had to put him on my list is because, you know, regardless of wrestling ability or any of that, like something about his creepy ass Mr. Rogers grin and like weird Pee Wee Herman personality. It's just like, all right, bro, you are fully committed to this ham sandwich.
You're out there. He's out there and he's loving every minute of it. He was going to be the next president.
Vince is back there like creepy, huh? He's committed to the gimmick, Kyle.
Yeah, sometimes you're just nuts.
Exactly. Thanks. And we're gonna keep it rolling in an effort to talk a little bit more about some of the people we have coming up, because I know we're gonna have plenty to talk about in the next few here. But speaking of nuts, you guys want to talk about X-Pac?
Yo, that's how crazy is it that he is?
X-Pac!
He was 87 on our list. I had him as 88 on my list. So I'm just like, oh, perfect. I was right in the perfect ballpark for this.
It. All right. You're going to make me go get like the oh, my God. So I have a master list of the top 100, but then I also have like 8 pages of everybody's votes. So I can kind of look at we are here. But go ahead. Thoughts on X-Pac while I look down this.
X-Pac, like, the smartest thing that he ever did was make friends with the Click, because he turned a friendship with the Click into membership in every important faction that ever existed during his era, and found a way to never even be in the top 10 most popular on the roster in the company at any given time, but always relevant. Always.
He was always hanging out with the right group. Like, right? Yep. He. Yo.
And we named Heat after him.
Did we?
Yeah, X-Pac Heat. Go away, Heat.
I actually had him way higher on my list. I had him at 42nd on my list because he was always relevant. He was always, you know, guy in the NWO, in DX, he was always there, and he could always put on a great match. He was always, you know, he was great on the mic, and he could always make you hate him, and that's
if you can get a gimmick like, if you can get a gimmick name like the 1-2-3 Kid over, like that's pretty talented.
We're doing something right.
Well, and then he was X-Pac, but then he went back to the numbers. He was like, well, it's 1-2-3, not 4, not 5. Let's do 6. Let's do 6. How about 6?
I wonder if he pitched 4, 5, 6.
I love the determination of why he was 6. How that story changes depending on who you ask.
What? So go ahead.
Well, because some people will say it's because it's 1 + 2 + 3 = 6, and some people will say it's because he was the 6th member of the NWO. And
I think it's because he acts like a 6-year-old.
It was all check out. Hey. Ring the bell for
yourself. Hey-o.
Yeah, I had him 90th, so that's right in line, I think.
Hey. I
had him 90th.
So I ruined the curve.
One of the best cruiserweights. No, you don't, though, because he honestly is one of the best cruiserweights probably, like, of the last 30 years.
He was something, that's for sure. Watch the, what is it, the, on, this is great radio.
Dark Side of the Ring?
Dark Side of Wrestling, yes, thank you. That's on True TV, right?
Vice,
my bad. Thank you.
No, but one of the things I appreciate about him, and then we can move on to our next person, it's fine. One of the things I do appreciate about X-Pac is out of most of those people that were around during some of the shittier and grosser and more fucked up times in the business, he does not shy away from any of the fucked up shit that he was involved in. He doesn't sugarcoat it. He doesn't pretend to be a better person than he was. Like, he is very transparent about, like, all of the fucked up shit that was going on and what his role in it was.
Oh yeah. He's taking responsibility for all of it. So yeah, kudos to that. At least, you know, you can say that, but definitely deserving. We all think deserving to be in the top 100 here. So, let's get to the next person.
I got this one.
Go ahead. Yeah. All right. Go ahead.
He's a man. Such a man.
dare you disrespect Lord Steven Regal.
I don't know what was better, that Dan played that fucking music or the Kyle's look on Kyle's face is just like, I think Kyle wanted to laugh, but he's like, no, I'm gonna display total disdain for DP. DP, I disdain you.
Kyle, fucking do that shit.
The Duchess of, I challenge you to a Duchess of Queensbury rules match.
With Lord William Regal's mother in a shark cage.
Is there a better example of versatility at the end of his career, though? Like,
one of the
man.
Most underrated people in wrestling of all time, right?
Jesus.
Oh, easily. Always a bridesmaid, never a bride. But, like, he's another person, you know, we talked about with X-Pac, like, he's another person who always managed to find a way to make himself relevant, no matter how ridiculous the storyline or what they were trying to do. Like, they put a whole angle together about somebody pissing in his tea. He had the tag team with Tajiri when Tajiri pretended not to speak English.
Yes. That's a real thing, by the way. So the biggest thing about that is, like, Tajiri would pretend to not speak English all the time. And then they were on the road one time, and, like, Tajiri was hungry, and he kept reminding them. He kept saying Burger King, right? That's it, because you could see it on the exit or whatever. And they passed the exit for Burger King, and apparently Tajiri was just like, hey, motherfuckers, I wanted to go to motherfucking Burger King. What the fuck? And, like, he had never spoken English to them before and out of nowhere.
No, he really is, though. Regal's such a jack-of-all-trades, and, like, the second half of his career as the elder statesman in NXT and, like, teaching the new people how to cut promos, and, like, Regal's just so awesome.
Well, he's one of those guys that's just, yeah, like, is in the ring, like, you know, I don't want a guy that might be on the list already, but, like, a guy like Lance Storm, you know, these guys are just technicians in the ring and are really good.
Lance Storm did not make, if I could be serious here for a minute, Lance Storm did not make it.
What an oversight on all of our parts.
If I can be serious for a minute.
I have that shirt. He's the only guy that had him on the top 100.
I know. That's why I said, what an oversight on all of our parts. I have the If I Can Be Serious for a Minute t-shirt.
Nice.
And I forgot to put Lance on my top 100.
Not so serious,
just,
huh?
Just, you know, right. Like, yeah, like, he's Regal's just one of those guys. This phenomenal in-ring worker. Can help get anybody over and make them look good in the ring, you know. And you put in those guys that are a little more green that they, you know, they want to push to the moon, and he's going to make them look like $1 million. He's one of those guys. It's just that great, and that's why was so phenomenal later. Like you said, later in his career when he started to become, you know, more of the teacher, and then running NXT and doing what he does now is just so fantastic. Just one of those I don't know if you call him a generational talent, but just such a talent that he can continue to do his job and continue to make great stars by teaching him how to do things.
I feel like he could have been better 10 years before he started or 10 years after he started, because, like, that kind of style of wrestling kind of fell out of favor and then fell back in a little bit, you know?
You're right, but it never would have worked for him because of where he was at in his life when he was at his physical peak. Like, when he was at his peak of skill and was able to do the things that he did at their best was also when he was, like, neck deep in really hardcore substance abuse problems. And I don't think that those kinds of demons are the kinds of thing that, like, you can, like, get past for success, regardless of how good your style is approved.
I suppose Shawn Michaels made it happen, but that's one out of a million.
I mean, Shawn was also part of the clique, man.
That's why Shawn's in the top 10, bitches. There's a little pullback to the curtain. No surprise there. Oh my God. No, but Regal, I mean, underrated, just definitely has a place in the top 100. And who wouldn't have loved to walk down a beach near Atlanta in the late 80s and come across Stone Cold Steve Austin, Mick Foley, and William Regal laying out in the sun. Let's get to the next. Moving on here. Someone that is a real innovator and someone that is just underrated as well as far as psychology goes. And Kyle, I see you shaking your head. DP, I don't know if you got anything here, but we're talking about Raven.
What about me? What about Raven?
I mean, from Johnny Polo to Raven to everything he did from WCW to ECW and then having a little bit of a run in WWE.
Stevie Richards in part owes his career to Raven. Tommy Dreamer definitely owes his career to Raven. I think that I still don't think we give Raven enough credit for the storyteller that he was.
For sure. I agree 100%.
He comes with a different kind of baggage that a lot of the ECW guys came with, but like just from a storytelling and character innovation standpoint, like the work that he did with the Tommy Dreamer storyline, the work that he did in Impact in its early years, like helping people like Jeff Hardy and Abyss learn how to be main eventers. Like, I just don't think we give him enough credit.
Go back and watch his WCW stuff while the whole NWO
the and flock?
Everything else.
Yeah. The Flock.
Perry Saturn, Billy Kidman, everything back then was excellent. That was just like, that was some of the stuff that made that, and Chris Jericho is what made WCW good on top of the, you know, their bullshit, you know, main events that sucked on TV.
Yeah. He was just such a good character guy.
DP? There it is.
I found it.
Is that a crow? Make sure that's not a crow.
Is it Sting or Raven?
No, this was a Sting.
No, I know. I'm being an asshole.
I feel like, if you didn't get to see most of his WCW stuff or anything, like you guys are talking about, you know, some of the better stuff. I feel like he generally, when he was in WWE, he kind of got typecast as just a hardcore wrestler, and he didn't get that opportunity to show some of that stuff that he was good at, you know, that he could do. And that's the unfortunate part. But I mean, as far as a wrestler and everything else, like, yeah, he was phenomenal. He was really good.
All right, we're going to keep it moving here. The man of 1,001 holds, one of them which happens to be the moss-covered, four-handled family Gerdunza.
No, that was Perry Saturn.
No. Dean Malenko is the man of 1,001 holds.
No, Dean Malenko is the man of 1,001 holds, but the moss-covered, three-handled family Gerdunza was Perry Saturn.
Oh, I just remember Jericho saying that when he came out to read his list of 1,004 holds because he had three more.
Armbar.
Yeah.
Armbar was on there only a half dozen times.
Right-handed punch.
Armbar.
Not a lot of people get the right-handed punch. I wonder what was coming next. Was it right-footed kick or left-handed punch? I'm not sure. Well, let's talk about Dean Malenko. I mean, here's another guy like Adam Cole, in my opinion. If you're 6'3", you're WWE champion.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. He was somebody who sometimes I feel bad for Malenko and Perry Saturn because they came in with Eddie and Benoit and they put them in a group because they all came in together. But then Eddie and Benoit were the only ones that got pushed. And I'm just like, ooh.
But thank God for Eddie because he blew out his shoulder that first night and he needed all of them.
Oh, I know, right? I know, right? That is true. But, like, I think of the four, once they got to WWE, honestly, Malenko had the least memorable run because at least Perry Saturn had Moppy and Terry Reynolds.
Oh, Moppy.
And
yes.
All of that, like crazy bullshit that he did when he lost his fucking mind. But by the time Malenko got there, he was literally there for a little while. He held the light heavyweight title. I think he did a thing in Eddie's first thing with China. And then he was backstage guy.
Yeah. He was just left in the background. You're right. I mean, yeah, he like Saturn got himself some kind of gimmick and tried to push it to make it work. And obviously he had Eddie and Benoit, but then yeah, Malenko, unfortunate, his WWE run was very unfortunate. Cause he's one of those guys that, again, another phenomenal wrestler, you know, can do all the stuff in the ring. But just never had, like, I don't know, just never, to me, never had the charisma or, you know, yeah, the size and all that to be a top guy, and never had the opportunity when he came over to WWE to have a, you know, to show off what he could do. Really.
Especially because by the time he got to WWE, they had gotten away from managers in favor of valets. Mm. By the time he got to WWE, it was Deborah and the Cat and Terry and like
yeah,
just
that was not his
eye
era.
Candy valets, not like he needed a Jimmy Hart.
I mean,
he needed a Bobby Keane.
You ever seen Malenko in a Speedo?
I mean, I haven't, so I don't want to say
wrestling
no.
Trunks is pretty close, isn't it? Here's the thing you got to remember, though. You know, while him and Eddie may be comparable in size, Eddie worked like a fucking 6'10 power forward for the fucking Los Angeles Lakers. You know what I mean? Dean was a smaller guy, and he was also the oldest out of all of them, right? Like,
yeah.
He made a lot of money and did a great job working backstage for WWE, and that's not a bad place and way to finish your career instead of having to go pound your head into the ground in the indies, right? I mean, so... Yeah.
Doesn't he still work go back, as, like, an agent or something? Or is he with AEW now?
I don't know where he is.
I don't know. Man. I don't know if he's with anybody, but he was recently. I mean, within the last 36 months, he was... Yeah, I'll even say 30 months, he was with WWE, so...
That's what I thought.
If you want to watch some of his best work, you probably got to go back to early WCW. He did a lot of stuff in Japan and all over the country. So that's a guy you can go back and see a number of memorable matches with a number of guys who never had a memorable match in WWE.
Looks
so
like he might
Dean
still
Malenko,
be with All Elite Wrestling at this point.
Okay.
Maybe.
Talking about names and bringing up people who just deserve to be on this list regardless just because of influence, Antonio Inoki. I don't know if a lot of people know his background and everything, but I'll once again reference you to the Dark Side of Wrestling and the match that him and Ric Flair and Eric Bischoff put on in Korea, which is basically the largest attended wrestling show in the history of the planet. There's like literally 112, I thought, or so, 1,000 people. I mean, this is the Hulk Hogan. This is the Bruno Sammartino of Eastern wrestling, right? And I mean, I wish I had Andrew Balazs recorded as some kind of special message we could put up on the Titantron here for Antonio Inoki. But I think we all have a few kind words for him. Kyle, go ahead. Why don't you jump in?
So I'm not as familiar with his actual in-ring work, but we couldn't put together a list of like the top 100 people of the last like 40 years or however long Mania's been going on, and not ignore. Knowledge Inoki, like he is just legendary in Asian wrestling. He is so important to Japan. You know, without Inoki, there is no, you know, Tanahashi or Okada. Like he's that level of iconic. And so, you know, he deserves all of his flowers.
100%.
I can easily put together a top 100 without him because I don't any of his wrestling. Unfortunately, I know the name obviously, but I, you know, again, for me, just my list anyway, like I never got to see him wrestle. I never got to appreciate his talent, so he didn't make my list, which is, you know,
you gotta put in the work, DP. You gotta put in the work, man.
What, I gotta put in the work? No. Well, I'm not watching tapes.
All right, gentlemen, we got two people left on this list as we approach number 82 and 81. I think we all know these two, and we're going to kick it off with Mr. Ziggler himself, Dolph Ziggler. And I think that here's another guy that just like, if he wouldn't have come right after Shawn Michaels, you know, there was a little space in there. He might have been a more popular, but just because he's such a like a carbon copy in the ring, and that's not a bad thing, but it's like, he hasn't been able to differentiate himself. Like
I don't think that's what the problem was.
I wish he just would have never had the bad concussions when he was with Big E and
AJ Lee.
Phil's
AJ.
AJ Lee. He was running there, and then it was that happened, and he never really got on the same track again. Kyle, you kind of disagreed with me. Go ahead.
Well, so I think you're right that the concussions, when they happened, really fucked it. But I think the problem with Dolph was that before the concussions and before they finally gave him the belt, they waited too long to capitalize. Then he got hurt, and then it crossed over into a different problem. Now it's become the problem of, you've been the mid-card guy for so fucking long, why should I care? He's turned into like, we're bordering into Big Show territory of, you are still important and useful and will always have a spot because you're consistent and you're good at what you do, but the crowd can't take you seriously anymore because you've been here for like 18 years and we've never treated you like someone that they should take that seriously, so they're not gonna now. But I think that he fits in with our theme for the 80s, because our theme for the 80s has been consistency and people who find ways to stay relevant.
That's kind of how I put him in the same line.
You know, if you're gonna come on this show and start sounding, making all these goddamn sense and sounding so fucking smart, you're gonna end up coming back again.
Why do you think Rance kept me around, yo? I started on the edge as a guest host.
Upstage me, will you? Get the hell out.
No, for my, like, whether it's the Chairshot Radio Network, this podcast, or like running any number of sporting teams I've played on and for, it's like, man, if I can be the worst person on this team, we're going places.
It's a win. Right?
You always surround yourself with better people.
Just like what they did with Seinfeld. We'll get to that later. But, yeah, Ziggler. I remember seeing the first time I saw him after, you know, he did the end of the Spirit Squad thing and he came out and he was going to be his own guy. I was at a live SmackDown with my brother. And he came out as Dolph Ziggler. I didn't recognize him as the Spirit Squad. And I was like, oh, hey, that's Billy Gunn. I'm like, what the hell is Billy Gunn doing out here? And then he
discount
finished
Billy Gunn right down to using the Famouser.
And then he did the Famouser as his finisher. I'm like, it is Billy Gunn. And everybody around me was laughing their asses off. And then he turned off to be, he's a phenomenal talent. Fantastic guy. I think you're right on, though, with the, you know, getting stuck where he is. Like, they had a really good opportunity, and just I think everything with the injuries and stuff really stalled him, and just he got stuck in this position. I tie him with like Kofi Kingston, you know, that kind of level of guy where he could be like, I gave Kofi the title, you know, and everything, but he's, you never really can necessarily take him seriously as that top level guy at this point, which is unfortunate.
I got one better for you.
He had it, you know, he did. He had it. And it just,
I got one better on the analogous. He's John Morrison. Same era, same thing. He's John Morrison.
Yeah.
This person that looked for a minute like they were going to strap the rocket ship to, and that is just good at literally everything that he does. But then they didn't, and now nobody believes they're gonna.
Yeah.
Could they have been pushed better? Yes. But at the same time, I turn around and look at both that and Morrison and go, what have you done to differentiate yourself from everybody else besides, you know, like, you don't always remember the match. You remember, like, this guy did this or this guy did that and the character, and I want to root for this guy or root against this guy. And a lot of times it was like, oh, I like to watch you wrestle. Well, if that's the best thing that comes away from it, that's just not really intriguing enough.
In the case of Morrison, he failed upwards because the greatest thing that ever happened to him is he discovered Lucha. Lucha companies know how to present him in the right way. Like what he did with Lucha Underground, that's how you turn John Morrison into a world champion.
Right. They accentuated his parkour kind of skills and everything else.
Well, but they also gave him, we were talking about stables, they gave him a stable. They let Taya be the person that does all the talking, and Taya can go in the ring, so it works. She's a woman instead of a man, but it still works. So they let Taya do all of the talking. Gave him a stable so that he would have goons, and then presented him the shit guy, which they can't do in WWE because his tag team partner already has that gimmick.
Mic drop. Well, there you have it, Dolph Ziggler. Sorry, you're stuck in purgatory for the rest of your life. What are you going to do? It's a great,
keep cashing Vince's checks.
Yeah, it's a great paycheck if you can get it, right?
That's why you're ranked 82nd, not 41st.
He's making a shit ton of money. You know, he does comedy.
Yeah, I'll take that six-figure downside to be, air quotes, trapped in the mid-card any day.
I'm sure he has his pick at whatever bedroom partners he pleases, so good for you. We all wish we could have them. The last person on our list, I think, is kind of something that's, we could celebrate him for being ahead of his time, but also, like, the dude died. He was only 45 in 2007. Like, he could have been putting on bangers in the Attitude Era, like, if he had his shit together. And it's really sad because Bam Bam Bigelow was the original, you know, when I think of, like, the original athletic big men, him and Yokozuna, you know?
And he was always in better shape than Yoko, so he was able to do so much more than Yoko could. I'm just like, Bam Bam is one of my wrestling what ifs that, like, I get sad when I think about, because he just, everything you said. I always will remember him fondly for his time with the Jersey Triad with fellow Rest in Peace, Could Have Been Bigger. Who better than Canyon?
Canyon was good. There's another Dark Side of the Ring to watch. That one's scary.
Who better than Canyon?
Nobody. But no, but seriously though, like, Bam Bam is so fucking good. Like, so fucking good. I love Bam Bam. And that tattoo is so badass. And Greetings from Asbury Park is such a great name for a finishing move.
So ahead of its time, DP.
That, I'll tell you what, that is one of the ones now that I have seen the list there that I am very disappointed I forgot about, because he definitely should have made the top 100.
And you know what? Don't feel bad, though, because there's a lot of people's lists I looked at and went, okay, maybe you don't want him on there, but I thought, and I had the luxury of looking at all this stuff too, right? And
it was like, man, like, and I grew up watching him all the time in WWF, you know, and all, I mean, he just, yeah, he's one of the first, 10,
right?
Just the most athletic big man I remember seeing, you know, that young at that time. And yeah, just phenomenal athlete, phenomenal talent, was just great and so entertaining to watch and so entertaining to hate, you know, as a you know, wrestler too, which was just so fun.
Him and Vader are two of the big guys that I think to myself, like, man, I would love to have seen them in their prime versus some of the big guys we have now that can flippy-do all over the fucking place.
Right? Oh my God.
Well, Vader used to just beat people up for real. Like, him and Stan Hansen should be put in a fucking penitentiary. But anyway, that's a discussion for a different day. I think another great discussion here on the Chair Shot 100. The list will continue to get even more interesting. I try to do this every week. I'll give you both a guess on one person you think might be in the 71 to 80 range.
Let me consult my list.
Right? That's usually where I go.
You said 71 to 80. Let me guess. All right, I'm going to pick one from my list. Jushin Thunder Liger.
All right, DP.
I always like to pick somebody that's in my 71 to 80, that's in my next 10. So I'm going to go, well, we talked about him. I'm going to go with, well, I talked about him. We're going to go with Kofi Kingston.
Was also in my 71 to 80.
Hey, there you go.
The answers to your questions will be revealed next week on episode 343 of the DWI podcast. So you'll just have to tune in until then. Do you have 10 more minutes, or do we need to get you out of here?
Oh, I got to get out of here. My lovely significant other has come home, and I need to spend some time with him.
I hope that laundry was folded before he walked in the door. I want to thank you for coming on the show today. If not, you might have to make up with a back rub later. I don't know. I definitely want to get you on again before we're done with the list, somewhere in the top 50. We'll even tell you what Seinfeld episode, and we'll make sure Chris is on here so you can yell at him for us as well. Thank you for coming on, Kyle. Thank Brandon for us that, you know, he gave us some of your time today. And I can't wait to talk to you soon.
Absolutely. Thank you both for having me.
Pimp Outsider's Edge in your shit one more time.
Thank you both for having me. Once again, y'all, you can find me on Twitter at Dr. Smores. You can find my probably smarter brother Rance on Twitter at It's Ray Cash, R-E-Y as in stereo, C-A-S-H as in dollars. And you can catch us right here on the Chairshot Radio Network on the Outsider's Edge podcast. We come at y'all. We're trying to be more consistent about coming at y'all every Friday. We've done a couple weeks in a row, so, you know, fingers crossed.
Thanks again, Kyle. I'll talk to you soon, brother.
Thanks, y'all. Appreciate it. Y'all have a good one.
See ya.
All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, the Pez Dispenser will be in full play. You're listening to episode 342. Thanks again to Kyle for coming on. Love that guy. Love talking wrestling with him. Great sports fan, too. We'll have to get him on when we're talking sports again one day. But ChairShot Radio Network, prowrestlingtees.com/thechairshot. We'll be right back.
Why should you visit thechairshot.com? Thechairshot.com is your home for hard-hitting reviews, news, opinion, and analysis with attitude. Why? Because you're smarter than the average fan. Thechairshot.com. Always use your head.
Thechairshot.com. Always use your head.
Jawbreakers, to me, was like the ultimate challenge candy. It was almost like candy manufacturers were sitting in their laboratories going, I wonder if they'll eat this. This seems pretty tough to eat. Let's market it as some sort of an experiment. But the concept of Jawbreakers, what was the concept? Multicolored cement balls for a quarter? Is that the idea behind it? Let's see if we can hurt them. Let's see if they'll pay to be hurt. This is the idea behind Jawbreakers. And I did it. I ate them. I loved them. Ow, 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 ow. Oh, this is very painful. I'm really hurting, and this is hurting me a lot. I love them.
All right, folks. I love the it's going to sound weird. It's not meant to sound kinky or anything, but I love the mouth play at the end of those Seinfeld bits. Of, you know, I used to drive John Linder crazy. Do the Seinfeld thing. Well, if you make me laugh, I can't fucking do it. You know what I mean? But we're getting close to getting away from the comedy being in there. I do believe. I know I keep saying that, but the Pez Dispenser. What an interesting episode. It's mainly about George's relationship for the most part with this woman. Oh my goodness, boy, she's a handful until George is about to break up with her. But nonetheless, Kramer gets. This is also the Kramer and the beach.
Hey, when he makes the perfume, or
well, he goes to pitches it to Ralph Lauren, I believe it was. And then the guy shows up at the intervention.
At the intervention with it.
Yes. So there's so many things going on.
That's my scent.
But and not, yeah. So Jerry and Elaine just have the whole they went to the recital thing going on, right? Is there anything else going on with Jerry and Elaine?
No, well, other than Elaine.
Besides the intervention.
Them's doing the intervention because Elaine runs into their friend or whatever and tells him about Richie, who's a drug addict or whatever, and he'll listen to Jerry.
The guy with the nosebleeds who was hitting on Elaine.
Yeah,
and he's like. He's like, is it? What did he say first? What was his job? He was.
You asked me that one.
It was something he asked her. You won't date me because I do this or whatever. And she goes, maybe. And then he goes, it's because of the nosebleeds. And she goes, you're getting warmer.
Because you're a creep, maybe. Yeah, this one. Yeah, it's just a weird revolving around a Pez dispenser, like. Some random inanimate object kind of thing, like just such an oddball story that it revolves around. and with this, very Jerry George centric, like you said, George centric show about his problems with relationships. And you mentioned being in the hand, like he talks about he never has a hand in the relationship. He's never the one in control or whatever. And he always wanted that.
Right. Well, and then the line of the show is, you know, he's trying to break up with her and he's like, I'm breaking up with you. And then she's
like,
no. you know, kind of is like, oh, what can I do better? And then they end up staying together. And then she finds out that Elaine's the one that laughed after he kept it from her. And she's like, I'm the one breaking up with you. And George is like, you can't break up with me. I have hand. And she's like, and now you're going to need it. line of the episode.
Fantastic line. Yeah.
So all along, they end up having this intervention and all these people. Oh, Kramer's doing the polar bear stuff.
Kramer starts doing the polar bear with hanging out with the polar bears, doing the dives in the water. I don't know why. Just because he loves it.
He brings them all over to the intervention.
Over to the intervention.
Yes. And yeah, and the old guy is sitting there, and he's just, he's like, oh, and eventually, oh, that's like when people, they don't show up to Polar Bear. We go to the house, and we say, what, you don't want a Polar Bear anymore? What, are you too good to Polar Bear?
Yeah, it's...
But the joke that gets them, pardon, a sip of beer for Stone Cold Steve Austin. The part that gets Elaine laughing is he tells a joke to Elaine about the male kangaroo. And he wonders why he doesn't have a pouch. You know, the female has a pouch, he doesn't have a pouch, so the male has pouch envy. He's like, maybe I don't need all this pouch, can I at least get a pocket? And Elaine just starts going about the pocket. It felt like an episode that they wrote in season one or two and decided not to do until they ran out of ideas in season three. That's what it felt like. It didn't feel like where they were on the trajectory from the last 5-6 episodes.
Well, because it doesn't... Not all, I guess not all of them do. Like I was saying, in general, they all seem to tie to a, you know, continuous type of story, even though there's not really a story. And this one kind of just got dropped in there. Not that it's a bad episode or anything, but it just was just this oddball one.
Seemed a little different.
And that I noticed this too, and I wonder, this maybe is, that makes me think about it a little differently too, because Jerry refers to George as Biff again, and he uses that Biff line towards the first couple, you know, earlier in the seasons. Because of the whole death of a salesman thing that he makes a joke about one time, and he calls him Biff like for like two episodes. And this one was like an oddball reference to him calling him Biff again. And I was like, why is he like, I don't remember that being a continuous thing. And maybe that is where that happens, where because they wrote it earlier, you know, and just decided now we're not really going to do this one until later. And then they ended up dropping it in.
Yeah, you know, because they always said the first 12 were easy, and then after that it was kind of like pulling from everywhere. And now we're, you know, that's 14. The suicide's next, then the fix-up, then the boyfriend, then the limo. So there are some really good ones coming. I don't remember the suicide necessarily. Jerry worries that his comatose neighbor will recover and seek revenge, and George fears a plane crash. Okay, well, that really didn't help me remember the episode. But we're going to find out next week. How about Kramer ends up being the reason that they need to have an intervention for this guy, because he told him to dump the Gatorade over the old man coach and
yeah, it's a softball game. Yeah. Why not? Why always?
And then Richie. Jerry's explaining this all to Elaine and he's like, you know, telling her about how Kramer's involved and everything. And he's like, but Richie's changed so much since then. And she's like, what about Kramer? And Jerry's like, hasn't changed at all.
Yeah, always going to be the same guy. He's always going to be the one that, like, kind of, like, is just the fucking shit up. Or he's always involved in the story somewhere, you know, like this one.
Sure.
He convinces him to dump the Gatorade on one guy, and it causes Richie to go into a drug addiction because
he's this guy? It's pneumonia. Who's this guy? He can't stay. He doesn't know Richie. What do you mean? I'm the guy who convinced him to dump the Gatorade on such and such.
Caused him to get sick from get pneumonia or whatever. Like, it's fucking Kramer. Well, it's always Kramer.
There you have it. Any last thoughts here on the Pez dispenser? I know those things are hard to load.
They're very hard to load. And apparently you can get like a dozen of them at the flea market for like a buck. Because that's what
no
Kramer...
Fleas there. No fleas at the flea market, by the way.
No fleas. Are you sure? I'm pretty sure George believes that there's fleas at the flea market. Now I know what goes on at the flea market.
That's what caused him to call him Biff.
That's right. That's where he got Biff. Yep.
All right. Well, that's going to do it this week. Please continue to listen. We're going to get to 71 to 80 next week. So we're getting in there. We're getting close to the upper half of this list. Steve Cook will be on the show next week, the one and only. You can check out a lot of his stuff on thechairshot.com. He puts out the NFL betting picks every week, the article. Great fantasy football player, does a lot of stuff over at 411 Mania as well. Big wrestling fan, so we'll have Cook on next week. But make sure you are listening to Outsider's Edge and Kyle Moore's. Follow him at Dr. S'mores. DP, let everybody know where they can find you and this shoe.
Well, you can find me all over the worldwide social media interwebs at It's Me, DPP, and Catch the Shoe on Twitter at PodcastDWI and Facebook.com/DWI Podcast.
All right. You can follow me at PC Tunney, Chairshot Radio Network, all your favorite streaming platforms. And, of course, thechairshot.com, prowrestlingtees.com/thechairshot. Check that out. That's it. That's all we got. Is there reggae music? I feel like dancing.
Reggae music? What the hell? I don't have reggae music. I got some mean music.
Mean Street Posse.
I can Mean Street it, but that's about all I can do.
And you've been listening to another edition of the podcast known as DW. The bottom.
The reggae on the Mean Street.
Oh, that Connecticut reggae.
Oh, man.
TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.